Dr. Sado, do you have corn? We have corn.
Good afternoon, here at the naturopathic medical board meeting. It is 12:10, so we'll get the meeting going. I'd like to introduce our Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Khan, and also our Executive Director, Ms. Anthony. And we'll need to do a roll call.
Dr. Rubin.
Present.
Ms. Gallen.
Here.
Dr. Popio.
Here.
Dr. Sadlick.
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts.
Here.
We have corn.
All right. Any conflicts of interest that any board member has with the agenda? Civility statement, I'll briefly read. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying on its business. Those violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly. If you cannot do so, then we'll have you removed from the meeting room. I'd like to propose for board members that we roll 4A, and we take that, if possible, all the way to 4J.
So moved.
Okay.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. On number 5, what I'm going to do is if I'd like to rotate this around just a little bit with the board's permission, is we'll take case number 18098, and that would be Dr. Todd Witten. Is he here?
Right.
Okay. And Dr. Witten, you can come on up, and Gail has a chance to give us a little bit of a history.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is case number 18-098, Dr. Winton. On July 26, 2018, the board received an email from a pharmacist at Banner Health requesting clarification on scope of prescriptive authority for naturopathic physicians licensed in this state. Upon my return call, the pharmacist expressed concerns about a prescription written by respondent for Vivinase. Vivinase is a class 2 stimulation and not within respondent's prescriptive authority as a naturopathic physician. The medication is usually used to treat ADHD. Based upon the notification from the pharmacist, staff performed a controlled substance prescription monitoring audit. According to the PMP, between 1:30 and 2017, and 6/27/2018, respondent wrote 13 prescriptions for out-of-scope medications to 3 patients. All of these out-of-scope medications are controlled 2 stimulants. After speaking with me, the pharmacist called respondent to notify him of the out-of-scope status of the medication. The same day, I received a call from respondent's office regarding the matter and outlining the immediate steps which would be taken to remedy the situation. Those steps are outlined in respondent's written notice to the board.
Dr. Winter, with the patient's RL, MP, ZP, how did you determine they had ADHD?
So the I wrote down the patient's, I didn't put their exact names here, I just have their ages and sexes. So the 46-year-old female that I first prescribed her Vyvanse in October of 2017, she had previously been evaluated by a psychiatrist for ADD, and she was first prescription in March of 2018 for Adderall, and he was evaluated by a psychiatrist in Oregon. I was made aware that he was not able to make any prescriptions down in Arizona jurisdiction, and so I'd already been seeing this patient for a couple of years, and so I just started that prescription for him for the Adderall. The last patient was the 9-year-old male, and he was a son of the 42-year-old, and he was exhibiting also the ADHD, and he had been evaluated by the same doctor in Oregon. To answer your question, it was primarily from other professionals had made the evaluation instead of me for these.
Were you monitoring them at all, physical exam wise, with his regular standard care patients?
So with the medication, I was seeing them at least every 2 months for monitoring. With the child, we started on the lowest dose, and I saw him 1 week after, since that was his very first time. And we did vitals every time. Watching for any issues with appetite dropping, and any heart conditions associated with medicine, and so then from there I didn't see him again after the first week. I didn't see him again for 2 months later for his follow up after that.
Were you able to confirm through chart notes or prescription histories that these were in fact valid diagnoses, or was it more just patient communication?
It was patient communication. For the two males, I was in email communication with the medical doctor at from Oregon. So had that, but I did not have anything on the email. What she told me. That was it.
Obviously, you've been in practice quite a while. Was this really the first jump into ADD medications?
This is the first time I've ever prescribed was for the female back in October. That's the first time I ever did it.
Were you familiar at all that you couldn't do the ADD prescriptions?
I was not. Obviously some people are remorseful because they get caught. I was remorseful because I was just ignorant. It's my own fault for being ignorant of the law. I understand that. So I was, I've made myself completely clear on what our prescription rights are. I do understand that we're not allowed to prescribe those.
And then these patients, did you refer them out then to a clinician that can write for those? The ones that you were writing prescriptions for?
Yeah, so they were all released for that care. The only one that's all I've been doing for doing ADHD medication for with the child. The parents, we did make a referral for him. The dad, we didn't have a direct referral for him. The woman, the female older male. I'm treating him both with, well, I've treated him several times in the past using prolotherapy, and then also he is on testosterone supplementation. So I see him about every two and a half months for that. I am not for the child. I don't have any follow up with him, and then I have not seen the female since we told her that we can no longer prescribe.
But you assume that she went back to her original psychiatrist, but you're not sure.
Correct.
Where's your clinic?
Ahwatukee.
Any fallback from the patients as to why did you give this to me in the first place if you couldn't? Any questions like that came up?
No, we just made them all aware that it was a mistake on our part to prescribe it to them, and that we can no longer offer it.
And on what we're seeing, that there's phentermine listed as well. How often are you using that in practice?
So I see quite a few patients for weight loss. It's often used in the weight loss process, although I'm always, we don't want our patients to go past either a 3 month with it of subsequent use, or we have to make sure we monitor them on a monthly basis with that and make sure that they are dropping in weight, BMI.
Do you have the phentermine in your office, or do you write the prescription for it?
Many years ago I used to keep testosterone. That was the only thing I did keep in my office. I want to say that was like 6 years ago or so. But since then, I don't keep any medication in our office. We have none. Supplements.
Any other stimulants that you write for besides the phentermine?
Phenometrazine is kind of the backup for phentermine for some patients. But that's, I would say maybe one script every couple of months, I'm guessing.
You just go to low dose, like 37.5 dose.
The phenometrazine is a 35 milligram. You take one three times a day, versus the phentermine is the 37.5. You usually dose it at half, twice a day. I always encourage my patients to use the least dose necessary. Some of them just use half.
Is this your first time before the board?
Yes.
I think you did a good job on how you cleaned this up. I'd like to talk about that because we might have time to go over what to do. You acted immediately, is what it seems like. You called Gail back that day.
Yes.
Correct. It's a good response. And then you immediately tried to fix all this.
I think the steps taken, calling the pharmacy, denying any future refills, dealing with everybody right off the bat, certainly took care of it in a hurry.
Just the one thing that concerns me is that you assume that your patient will go back to the original psychiatrist. I don't know the drug, I don't prescribe the drug, obviously I'm not allowed to prescribe. I don't know what happens if you have an acute rapid withdrawal from it. Not taking it. I don't know if there's suicidal tendencies or something that could bring you back before the board if for somehow she was felt she was patient demanded by her physician, etc. But that one follow-up thing
Since this time, I've learned, I mean, there's a YouTube show on talking about how prevalent these particular drugs are on campuses now. It's like one of the number one abused drugs on campus.
True.
Yeah. And so I really wasn't aware of that. Definitely don't want to be part of that problem. So.
I mean, the dilemma we're faced with is it was a C2 control drug multiple times. I would say, the way I'm kind of looking at it, it's up to the board members, but either a letter of concern or CME order, non-disciplinary, need some feedback. There's a lot of different ways we can go with this.
Are we required to have a letter of concern or take disciplinary action, or could we dismiss it if we feel like in a case like this?
You could do whatever you choose.
Okay.
In a non-disciplinary setting, it's not kind of a letter of concern, it's just that.
You know, quite honestly, I don't have any concerns, I have to say right now, unless I can convince.
This is what we expect of our doctors. If they see something that they did in error, then they go and they fix it.
And I'm not particularly concerned. I would be if they were still using it. But I quite honestly, on this end of the table, I don't have concerns right now. I think you did a good job. I think this is what I would expect from a licensee at this point, somebody who is out there practicing medicine trying to protect. I don't know that there's any particular continuing education. He did his own continuing education. He weren't being looked at.
He reacted quickly and then also was proactive with educating himself. So.
Are you real clear now on the C2s you can prescribe in terms of pain meds, in terms of ADHD meds, dietary med fall into a different class, but I just want to make sure that you're really clear on the C2s that you cannot, like for example, Demerol is a C2, that you can't prescribe Demerol. I just want to make sure that you're not back here again because you didn't understand what C2s you could use and what C2s you can't.
Right. From my understanding, the main thing about C2s is all the opioids that are prevalent in it. I have prescribed in the past, quite a few of the hydrocodone-based. You can see from my record over the past 6 months, it's much less than normal, even though we do a lot of motor vehicle accident and pain cases. So I'm conscious with that. I'm not even planning on prescribing it past the January due date because of the extra prescribing or electronics prescribing required for that. So that's my main understanding with the C2. We can do morphine, but I've never prescribed morphine.
Feeling that the steps were taken, that this is something we can dismiss, or is there a need for additional?
I think we could discuss dismissing it. I think if we were issued a letter of concern asking to make more CME, I don't know that it would change anything. I don't know that issuing a letter of concern is the best thing to do. I don't think having him go take an online course or something, flow expense, or highly available as an engineer, he would be all the information he needs. He would go get anyhow after that course, and think he's already gotten that. So I move to dismiss.
Okay, so we have a motion to dismiss. Anyone else have further discussion? And again, to reiterate, my only concern is apparently you do. You know what C2s that you can prescribe, what C2s you can't. And you've been out there long enough, so I don't understand how you got into the ADHD meds after you've been out there since 2000, but it transpired. just be real careful with that, especially with your hydros and all the other opioid medications, your C3s, et cetera. So I'll make a motion to second the motion to dismiss.
Is there any discussion?
More discussion?
I think what Dr. Sadlak said was very wise, and just because it has a hydro in front of it doesn't mean it's a near C2.
Do you roll call?
Let's do it. Any further discussion?
No further discussion.
Yeah.
And Dr. Rubin?
Yay.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And is, we're gonna move on. Is Dr. Ib here? Is Dr. Ib here, legal counsel with you?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm sorry, what was your first name?
My first name is Melanie and my last name is LaVoy.
Okay, thanks, Melanie.
Yes, and just for the purposes of knowledge of the board, in regards to the case number 17-077, Ms. Ib is comfortable in answering any questions the board has in regards to that particular case. But in the other two cases, I've advised her that I don't believe it is within my, at least my feeling, to answer any questions about these two particular case numbers. I just wanted to make sure you guys knew that up front.
Okay.
And we can discuss that later if we need to.
Well, let's start with the easiest and then we'll move from that point. So that'd be 077. So Ms. Ib, you said, Dr. Ib, you said you were going to discuss that with us?
Yes.
So feel free to.
In regards to this case, they were requesting medical records, and really at that time period, we haven't implemented other systems that we've implemented now. And our staff told us, the administration and myself, that they had already sent out medical records. We had verified that they had sent it out to someone, but the time period that they requested it the first time, when I first saw that cover sheet, was so long prior to the date of the second or third request that I can't actually be 100% sure that it was the same company. So although I know the medical records went out for this patient, I'm not sure they are the ones who received it the first time. And so now we've implemented other things and realized that we weren't quite.
What do you mean? You're saying that you may have sent somebody's private medical records somewhere?
No, so we have multiple medical record requests for patients, and I'm pretty sure that this patient, if I recollect correctly, had multiple requests from our office, so more than one lawyer group sent us a request for it.
Yeah. But you said you implemented other things.
So now every time that a medical record request gets sent out, that cover sheet is saved in a specific file, and we can go back and look at the cover sheet and verify that that specific request was done correctly. Because since we've been doing medical records for other companies, some of them even request it more than once, and so that was a different problem we had. So we've now made it so that the cover sheet is included in that specific folder. So it's a lot. And really what it comes down to is we weren't on the top of our game with this, and we were trying, but we just didn't realize it hadn't been done. I'm sorry.
Who was taking the calls on the six different times that they called in the final letter in August, and then the records didn't get over there until, I believe, October.
I only took the last call, and I sent it out personally myself with the fax, but our fax machine at that moment, that that about 2 week or 3 week period, was having problems printing cover sheets, so apparently it never went through.
And did you, and from the very beginning, because this all started back in March, did you get, I know the attorney wanted the records, but did you actually get a patient release?
We got the request from the attorney by fax, so.
But did the patient sign for those?
On the attorney's paper.
Okay, all right.
I just gotta know, this is 5 months and 6 tries. I would really like to know what transpired. I mean, we have an accounting firm, like law firm here, about what happened in each individual hall. I'm assuming you don't have records this good, or else you probably tell us to marry what happened on each call. Seems like there was some staff that was or wasn't there, there may have been a manager that sort of refused to pass the call on. And I think, I mean, I guess I'm just wondering, like, 5 months to get somebody's records in 6 calls. I don't feel like your explanation has talked to that. You just kind of said, oh, we weren't on top of our game. I hope this wasn't on top of your game. You're a licensed physician by this board.
Really, what it comes down to is we just, the manager and I, when we questioned the person who does medical records and asked if it was done, she said it was done, and we said, can you redo it? And she said, okay. That's really what it comes down to. And
it's 5 times.
We had more than one person working on the medical records within this time period.
How many people were employed in your office at the time?
The original date, March, would have been 7 or 8 people, and we had a staff turnaround sometime in June-ish. I think it was June.
Full staff turnover?
The people who did medical records and prior health, they changed it sometime between June and July. And then,
so between June and July, okay, in the month of June, where there were 2 requests made?
Yeah, in June and beginning of July, it was completely changed.
Was Rachel there?
Rachel was not there until around July 1st.
Okay.
And me and her, she brought this up to me in the end of July. And me and her, we worked on that at that point in time.
Was John there in July?
I think John started slightly before July.
Right, and he was the one that the lawyer spoke to on June 27th.
Yeah.
Because Vince was no longer there.
Yeah.
So
he had actually, I think John talked to other staff members and asked if it was done multiple times. I think,
who owned the practice at the time?
I don't own the practice. John is one of our managers. My father owns practice. He does with the administrative work in regards to that stuff.
What was the owner of the practice, one of the employees at the time?
He was not there at the time.
Of the 7 employees, does that include the practicing physicians and or nurse practitioners?
No.
So just administrative
medical assistance, things like that.
How many people were employed that were in charge of medical records and pre-auths at that during the time of the
We have usually one person doing medical records and 2 people doing prior auths.
How many doing medical records?
Usually one.
One.
Unless they need assistance, and then they go get somebody to print more medical records for them, but they are in charge of it.
So one person, was it one person consistently this whole time, or did you rotate out your medical records person?
Yeah, but during the, sometime between June and July, we changed people and had all of the prior auth people gone and the medical record person gone.
So Dr. Hip, currently, what is your procedure to get, I send you a request that I want you to send something i.e. Patient request records. What's your current procedure in place to get the records?
Current procedure is that it goes to a specific staff member. The staff member looks at it, prints records, makes sure that the physician or the nurse practitioner approves the previous records to make sure that it is complete.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything missing from the written, from the electronic version, they also add it from the written version. Sometimes our vitals are missing on that. And then they send it out, and they take the cover sheet plus the request now and put it in a binder.
So about standard, about 30-day type thing?
Usually about 30 days.
Okay. And then once they, do you just stamp faxed on them so you know they've been sent?
The cover sheet, when you look at the cover sheet that prints from our machine, it has the word okay on the top, so that it was okay received. It also has the word busy on top, so if it wasn't received, it says busy, and we try again. So it doesn't go in the folder until it says okay.
Did you and Mr. Black get this all squared away then?
Yeah, we hand-delivered it because the faxes just didn't work well enough. We drove it to his office.
And you haven't heard back from him since that point?
No.
Well, if we take the, obviously, just this case, 17077, then I definitely have some concerns. So you do have a method in place now. However, that went from March, I think Dr. Rubin said, it looks like till October. So I do have, you know, basically a letter of concern as to how that's being handled, because we don't know how you're handling it now.
Well, Dr. Zedlin, perhaps we could ask staff to bring to us a written protocol as a consent agenda or something so we can take a look at it, make them, if it passes through the board. I have the same concerns too that it may not be handled that well in the future, and that she could be back here for the same thing if she continues to practice.
Okay. So my thought would be a letter of concern, but
I have a problem taking all of these separately. I'd like, maybe I even though she doesn't necessarily want to answer questions about each case, I'd like to understand what's going on. There seems to be a trend overall in practice, and I'm just concerned just in general about the practice as well as the specific incidents.
You want to go into executive, the legal counsel? I'll make a motion.
Is a motion to go into executive session for legal advice?
Legal counsel, yes.
And Dr. Rubin second.
Dr. Rubin second. Ms. Gale?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we shall return. Okay, it's 12:55. We're back in session. And we were discussing case number 17077, and some board members had some other suggestions, so let's discuss how we'd like to proceed. A couple options we discussed were we could take 077 on its own, or we could and then roll 078 together and 092 together. Or, if the board would like, then obviously we discuss taking all three of those cases at once. So I'm going to kick
Dr. Sedlick, the board should deliberate on each case.
Okay. So let's finish with 077 then. So we were at the point where Dr. Rubin had suggested that we have a written protocol for how medical records are handled. Is that correct, Dr. Rubin? That we have a written protocol from her office on her stationery of how she handles medical records.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we wanted to check in to make sure it's acceptable, and so she wouldn't come back here for that.
Okay.
Or just to protect the patients.
want to make a separate motion for that, come up with a conclusion for 077?
Should we talk about all of the cases individually first?
Okay.
Should we talk about the other things that are documented on here, such as like the failure to keep the adequate medical records, falling below the standard of care, those things?
You mean?
Specifically on 77.
77, sure. Go ahead, let's discuss it. So on, if digressing on 077, failure to keep proper medical records, keeping that as it is, what issues does the board find with the failure on just that case alone, 077? What issues do we have?
I think there seems to be a lack of at least, you know, in-depth physical exam on these chronic pain patients, this one in particular. Like, for example, heart and lung are normal. I get that, but I think there's more to be said. Blood pressures, things like that. I think that's one of the concerns, was lack of complete. And then it does seem to be kind of a cut and paste. This doesn't seem to be a changing on ICD-10s. Do you tend to repeat most of the same ICD-10s, visit after visit?
If the patient doesn't have a change in ICD-10s, I repeat them. If there's an acute thing, I will normally add acute radiation.
And do you feel like you expect to see changes in the diagnoses after after the patient continues to come in for treatments? Would you expect to see a resolution or more just a management?
I would say it's a management / decrease in severity.
Can I just get one thing straight? Are we talking about day 327-17 for patients? Lack of day of birth 323-87.
327-17, yeah.
Okay. Doctor, was this the initial visit with you?
That's a good point, given what the subjective complaints were. And then the physical, like you said, there's tenderness to palpation, but there's no physical exam really denoting anything being palpated. And then after all is said and done, the prescription for hydrocodone, generally you'd expect some more of a plan.
So just to save us a little bit of time, yes, indeed, I apologize for thinking 327-17 was the initial. I think the first one we have in our records for what looks like the same DOP is 12-15-15. And so I would change my question to say, was Dr. Depp, was 12-15 of 2015 the initial consult with this patient?
That sounds about right.
Okay, could you confirm, please?
That's the first record I provided, so that was
so the chart note that we have before us dated 12-15-15 with the DOB of 323-1987 with a SOAP note here is your entire note.
That would be correct.
Okay. Knowing that it lacks appropriate history by a lot, knowing that you did provide an assessment, you did provide an objective, but there was no plan. I just wanted to
counselor would have been an applier technically.
Okay, do you refer this patient to a counselor?
Yes, at that time.
Okay, is this the entire history that you took on this brand new patient?
She says about her anxiety, about her job, her car, and going out of the house. We probably spent 30, 40 minutes talking about those three things.
Do you realize that your subjective is severely lacking?
Yes.
Let's go to the next visit that we have, which is 9/22 of 16, which is roughly 9 months later. And there we have another subjective. Again, there's not much there, but this is a follow-up visit. We have an objective level. We have an assessment, which I guess I'm really going to need some explanation, but this is how you came up with all these assessments with such a very small, especially initial subjective. I think this is the thing the board is going to want to hear from you on. Because it does seem like it's almost a cut and paste. Looks like you added low back pain and you removed migraine, diagnosed with an anxiety disorder again, and PTSD is removed, and you maintain the agoraphobia with panic disorder. I guess I'm going to open it up to the board. If we just take those two and we're looking at sufficiency of patient gathering, I don't see anything here that would, that substantiates the assessment that could then substantiate the treatment. And therefore, I would say that at the beginning, these chart notes are grossly inadequate to substantiate your diagnosis and treatment of UA.
Since this chart note was written, we have changed our policies and our how everything goes. We changed from this EHR system to a different EHR system sometime in 2017. And then we have even implemented where a scribe will document the chart and then the provider approves it since then. Even more so, and we are also doing transcriptions as well.
I think that's great that you're changing, but I'm not impressed that you would approve something. You approved this and you created it, so having a scribe do something, are you saying that a scribe is more efficient and sufficient in providing chart notes than you are as a licensed physician through this board?
I'm saying that the scribe gets every detail versus I did not get every single detail on these chart notes.
I think you should back up. You missed grossly detailed. I don't see a family history, a social history, I don't see allergies, I don't see contraindications, I don't see a chief complaint clearly stated. I see three sentences for an initial history and you prescribed benzodiazepine and diagnosed her with six diagnoses. So changing EHRs and having a scribe who is not medically trained as a physician doesn't cut it with this board. So I don't have much more to say here on this case, but we can keep going through chart note by chart note if you guys want. Nothing seems to change. And so I don't see where, I don't know that we're going to get any further because we're not giving any real information except that we changed EHRs. This doesn't tell me anything about her ability to practice on this case. So I'm fine if you guys want to move on to the next case, unless you have more than we need to.
No, I concur with you, Dr. Rubin. We might as well move on then to the next case. I think your attorney was going to be speaking for you on these cases. If we look at the next case, remember that 17077 was based on the records, and that was the complaint from Black. But as Dr. Rubin pointed out, yes, Mr. Black didn't like the untimeliness of the chart being sent, but then there are multiple deficiencies in the notes that were sent to Mr. Black. So if we move on to 078 and 18092, it all kind of dovetails together. I take it that with 078, and I know that Dr. V won't be talking about this, but
do you want
Yeah, go ahead, Gail, you can.
Case 078, so what were we referring to?
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is case number 17-078, Dr. Jelena F. Respondent may have prescribed controlled substances to some patients in excess or dangerous combination and without documented medical necessity or legitimate medical purpose. As an example, for patient J.E., during the month of June 2017, respondent wrote a total of 120 alprazolam tablets, 49 hydrocodone acetaminophen, 10-325 tablets, and 120 carisperidol 350 milligram tablets, during which time the patient also received from Hannah Ian, the nurse practitioner employed by respondent at the time.
Okay. Hannah Ian is licensed by this board. Are you sure that's the correct name?
It's not.
Isn't that something Hannah? I think you might have the wrong name there. I know you're on tape.
Are we talking about the nurse practitioner?
Yes.
Okay. Is that what you're asking me? I'm sorry.
Yes. I'm making sure you have the right name there.
Yes. Hannah Ian,
Nicole
the nurse
Hannah.
Practitioner.
Nicole Hannah.
I apologize. Nicole Hannah. The nurse practitioner employed by respondent at the time. 112 oxycodone tablet and 74 OxyContin tablets. In addition, just 5 days prior to writing the first prescription in June of 2017, on May 30th, 2017, respondent wrote J.E. a prescription for 120 carisperidol tablets, and the nurse practitioner wrote a prescription for 224 oxycodone tablets. Respondent failed to keep adequate medical records for all 13 files reviewed. Respondent failed to keep adequate medical records. As an example, for patient CH, although the PMP indicates respondent wrote 30 prescriptions for controlled substances for the patient between 2/11 of 16 and 8/12 of 17, the record supplied to the board consisted only of 1, November of 2016 lab report, 1, January of 2015 lab report, 1, right shoulder MRI completed in March of 2016, and 1, limited chart note from respondent dated 2/22 of 16. Respondent may have fallen below the standard of care when treating some patients. Where respondent has failed to meet the standard of care, the board will articulate the standard and how respondent failed to meet that standard. The board received an anonymous complaint from someone who only identified themselves as a pharmacist. The complainant stated they have seen a, quote, huge increase in the number of narcotic prescriptions coming from White Cranes Medical Center, the office of Jelena Ip, that the increase is both in dosage and quantity of tablets, and benzodiazepines with muscle relaxers are prescribed in combination with opioids. Based on the results of a controlled prescription monitoring program report run by board staff, medical records for 13 patients were subpoenaed. Upon review of the records, respondent provided the board with the records that respondent provided the board are incomplete. Charts reflect respondent consistently wrote prescriptions for opioids, benzodiazepines, and muscle relaxants without performing adequate physical examination. Although respondent states she checked the PMP on every visit, if she had, she would have seen overlapping providers and prescriptions for some of these patients. It appears that while respondent wrote prescriptions for in-scope controlled substances, she relied on a nurse practitioner working in the office to write prescriptions for oxycodone, a medication that which is not within the prescriptive authority of a naturopathic physician. As an example, patient JH, a 60-year-old female, presented to respondent with current medications for high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and complains of left knee and back pain. The limited chart notes provided by respondent indicate JH presented with, quote, to establish a PCP and pain management, end quote. Records indicate JH presented to respondent for the first time on 1/10 of 2017. Taking no pain medications. According to the PMP, the last time she filled a prescription for the pain medication prior to the visit with respondent was on 7-3 of 2016, when another provider wrote a prescription for hydrocodone APAP 5-325, number 10. Respondent lists 8 different diagnosis codes attached to the first date of service. It is unknown how she arrived at some of these more specific diagnoses, such as rotator cuff tear and stress. Several dates of service later, she attaches a diagnosis of anxiety disorder. It is unknown how she arrived at this particular diagnosis, as the chart notes make no mention of any type of anxiety. And in fact, the intake form listing psychological issues and anxiety as a symptom was left blank by the patient. On the first visit, respondent writes a prescription for hydrocodone APAP 10-325, number 150, including this, indicating this is a 25-day supply. The prescribing regimen continues on a monthly basis, during which time the nurse practitioner who worked for respondent is writing oxycodone prescriptions days apart from respondent's hydrocodone prescriptions. None of the charts reflect actual blood pressure readings, pulse, respiration, or weight.
Do you guys want to talk about patient JH, since the doctor's not going to answer questions from us as advised by her attorney, so I guess we should talk about it amongst ourselves.
The only thing I would want to say to the board is she's not making statements in regards to subsection 1 based on my advice, and my advice comes from the following. There's an ongoing investigation that I've been made aware of that has not been, that has nothing to do with this board, that could result in any statements she makes in regards to this particular allegation, subsection 1. Could be used in furtherance of an ongoing investigation, and because of that, I've advised her not to make statements in regards to this. I want to make it clear it's not that she does not want to cooperate with the board or answer your questions. It's just for her protection and safety in regards to any other ongoing investigations, like I said, that I've been made aware of. I do not know the breadth of that investigation, and for that reason, I'm being overly cautious. But I just wanted the board to know she in no way is not trying to cooperate, but it's something that I've advised her that I believe is in her best interest to not answer in regards to at least subsection 1. I'm assuming all of them kind of meld together in some way, shape, or form, but in particular to subsection 1 in regards to these prescriptions and things of that nature. I just don't think it's appropriate for her to answer the questions, given that this is a hearing that recorded that other people may have access to, and I don't feel comfortable in her answering those questions. That's all I wanted to know.
Counsel, are you referring to the DEA report then?
I am.
Okay. And then there's an interim consent. Is she complying to that?
Yes, Judge. Yes, Judge. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm in criminal court every day, so yes, I'm sorry. She is. And I know that I'm not sure if it's something we're going to talk about in relation to number 6, but yes, she is been following this. She willingly signed it after I spoke to counsel, and she's in compliance with it.
Are you practicing at all right now?
Just acupuncture and herbs.
I'm sorry, are you practicing under your naturopathic license or a different license?
Naturopathic.
And then if we look at, I'm not trying to muddy the waters here, but if we go slightly ahead and look at number 6, you did put a certificate in to dispense.
I was under the impression that that included herbs at that time period, so that's why I did that.
And I think also because there was a time limit that she did not want to miss a certain time frame in regards to the application, so that's why she did it as well. I don't know the date that she submitted it. I don't know if I have a copy of that.
She didn't.
Okay. But she is following the interim consent agreement verbatim as it was written.
Yes.
Dr. Sagwin, can you reiterate the consent agreement that she said, or did you tell me where it's located? Because I looked at it yesterday, but I can't find it today.
I think it's towards the very beginning. It says interim consent agreement for licensure restriction. Got it?
Yeah, I just have trouble with this.
Does the board want to review this real quickly?
I think that'd be.
Okay, go ahead.
So this is the revocation of the DEA registration certificate, and meaning that she is not able to provide those restrictions, basically.
No IVs, no meds, marijuana, no controlled substance with these, nothing's a problem, essentially.
Definitely for an actual prescription.
Okay.
You know, between us, we know that herbs can be toxic too, and herbs can have contraindications, and herbs can be overdosed or used inappropriately, just because they're natural doesn't mean they're not dangerous. And I have concern that this physician may not be savvy to that, given what we see in some of these cases, and we may want to discuss further limitations, or that we need to have cases brought to us. There is a lot of work that we're talking about, the board would get expensive, but we're going to protect the public. Then we need to talk about that.
I appreciate the question, decision making at all levels, so I agree with you.
I'm not sure that she, this doctor, would have the judgment, given what we see with how she prescribed these medications, that she would have the same, that herbs are safe for her patients. Same with acupuncture needles. I mean, you have to know what you're doing and where you're, what point you're putting it into, what says needle, how to sterilize, if you choose to sterilize, where your organs are, how far can you go in a chest point before you're going to puncture a lung because of that electric system. I mean, there's a lot here. You know, use a 3-inch needle in a chest because you don't have a 1-inch and you're doing the wrong way, and you've got, you know, you've got a pneumothorax right there, that's an emergency. So I think these are, she's practicing herbs and acupuncture, which is why I'm bringing these up. We should talk about this and talk about the work for other things. Plus the ability to diagnose skills, you know, still after diagnosing and doing physical exams. And we haven't seen, based here, what rises to the standard of care and competency to, you know, to be a licensee by this board to be diagnosing and treating patients. So we might also want to discuss if we want those limitations on that, or if we need to subpoena current records to see if there have been changes or if it rises to the standard of care. Those are my thoughts. So we could develop some kind of consent agenda that's brought to us next month, or I don't know if we're allowed to see things earlier, since, or if we have a meeting that we'll have. I'm not sure. But something needs to be done, and done quickly. And we may need to, before we do anything, we're probably going to need to go into executive session anyhow.
I make a motion, Dr. Rubin.
Do we want to wrap up any discussion with regards to these thoughts, too, before we jump into that?
Mm-hmm.
Just so we can discuss anything.
Yeah.
Just so we don't have to jump back and forth.
Yeah, I think what, and that's a great point. The last two, with, you know, with six, and then obviously dropping back into the rest of that. Dr. Rubin, your concern is with the interim consent. Let me make sure I'm echoing what you're saying. With the interim consent. consent that she currently is operating under, that you have questions in, about that, and how you'd like that, you know, worded.
Well, I think the interim consent only talks about those that are pharmaceutical prescription requiring actual prescription.
Correct.
As licensed physicians, we need to treat everything that we, every piece of advice, every herb, every point we do, every dietary advice needs to be taken seriously as actual medical advice. So we need to establish that a doctor practicing under this board is practicing competent medicine. And if we're going to allow this doctor to keep practicing, we need to have to put into place additional restrictions aside from just that DEA restriction.
I think what you're saying too is we don't have any evidence that there is actual physical exam competency that would then be able to even diagnose whether it be acupuncture or herbal treatments. I don't think, we don't have any evidence that there's physical exam capacity and competence.
Right, and just for the non-medical people that are listening around this board, that in order to establish a treatment, you first have to diagnose. In order to establish a diagnosis, you first have to hear what the patient has to say, ask them questions, interview them, and then have objective findings. It goes in that order. So yes. I second the motion.
Okay, so all those in favor going into executive session?
Aye.
Okay. So 1:25 and we're into executive session.
Yeah, what are you saying?
Have they asked me for 10-minute break?
5 minutes.
Okay, so we'll go for a 5-minute break and reconvene in 5 minutes. Okay, it's 1:45. We're back in session after a brief break. I think what the board would like to do is to, we're going to stick with 078 and we'll go through these cases. I believe there are 13 of them. We'll be utilizing, Counselor, the report that Dr. Thompson has written for us. So we'll be pretty much sticking to that. So with that in mind, board members, we could just go ahead and start with, that would be patient GH. So GH, he has stated his concerns with GH. And I need some quick opinions, maybe a paragraph or two, what you want to do with utilize GH as one of our items of concern for that case.
I can make a comment.
Yes.
Using the consultant summary there, and, the patient was treated with opiates for a year and a half. The only documentation stated was single office visit note that does not contain the minimum amount expected. I think that's enough to include this case.
Okay. Then let's move on to page.
And I should say, I should add to that, that there is a standard of care out there for some medicines that a patient must return to for an office visit in person to after 1 year of having been prescribed the medicine. I think opiates would fall outside of that because prescribing that chronically for a year without seeing the patient is outside of the standard of care, and that would be the reason for inclusion.
With that particular patient, was that, did you ever refer? Okay, so let's keep moving on. Let's move on to JH, case two. Standard of care, when prescribing controlled substance, proven prescriber. The only thing that I possibly see that could have been, that was perhaps properly done was an MRI.
Yeah, we discussed this case a little bit at length, and I think based on, you know, the insufficient office noting and the diagnoses that we don't know how they would provide,
person, that is a concern that just really can't happen in the 6 month window between visits or between prescribing opioids and then immediately starting back on opioids.
And isn't it generally started at a lower dose instead of?
And then, J, is that J E, I believe? Again, you know, a lot of this is, for example, this actually was with Suboxone. We know that there's problems, everyone knows that there's problems with benzodiazepines and opioids. We all know about respiratory suppression. If we move on to RW.
I think JD particular, I'm sorry, I just want to go back to that one.
Sure.
Just note that just the particularly high level of opioids, I believe it was upwards of 500 morphine equivalents in some, during some prescriptions. So this, that would also be a real point of concern, the level of opioid prescribing, particularly in this case.
RW, we got problems with RW because if you look at the first paragraph, we have a benzodiazepine, which is Xanax, then we also have combined that with Vicodin. Again, respiratory issues, higher addiction, et cetera.
And somebody also being treated for addiction.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's also multiple prescribers outside of the office as well that don't appear to account or account for all those additional scripts that are not written by this office as well.
With checking the PMP, wouldn't the physician be aware
exactly
that the prescriptions are being filled?
Exactly.
Case five was patient LM, L is in Mary, L is in Lamb, M is in Mary. Again,
I think it falls in line, but I don't know that this is one of the stronger cases.
Morphine equivalent issue. Next is SS. Falls within the scope.
I find it interesting that in Silva's first line, patient SS was treated with multiple controlled substances over a period of almost 1 year without any documentation whatsoever. Saying this is particularly troublesome given the medications prescribed. Board would like to include, think that this is one that we want to discuss further, but complete lack of documentation is concerning for me.
Right.
Were all of those Aprosolum and hydromorphine, all those were all at the same time? Is that what this is saying?
Right. On many of the cases, that's where we stand.
And hydromorphone is an out of scope medication for us. That's a lot of this. As you think they've been potentially lethal if taken on more than a dangerous combination. And as we know, that there are significant mother deaths from opioids.
KA, which is 7, you've got a couple of different things going on with that. You have medication utilized for sleep, you have medication utilized for anxiety.
And lack of documentation.
Lack of documentation.
Yeah, for the non-physicians on the board or in the room, any time you refill and prescribe, a physician is required to make documentation of an action taken on behalf of the patient case.
I think I remember some doctors before that we've interviewed, I mean, isn't it standard of care that they are seen before the prescription is, or can that be done over the phone?
It depends on what the prescription is, a thyroid refill.
Right, but like controlled substances, like.
Usually, you need to have a prescription, or you need to at least be in the presentation that you prescribe, or an annotation prescription. Can't handle it.
How frequently do they need to be seen, or what would be the standard of care?
You know, I can't speak to that exact standard of care because I don't practice that in my practice. But maybe one of the other doctors who practice in more pain management can take that.
It seems as if it's monthly or every 2 months.
Monthly or every 2 months.
That was my understanding. So for a patient to not be seen for an entire year is what we're seeing.
you look at case A, which is RF, we have the more.
This is a bad, this is a big, big one with the, my understanding of the co-prescribing between the nurse practitioner and Dr. Griffith as well.
So we can see this patient is on morphine, this patient's on oxy, this patient is on a lot of medications. So standard care. Definitely.
The risk to the patient is huge on this one, isn't it? I mean, I'm not a physician.
Yeah, yeah, it would be. Simply because of the amount of medication, and then most likely could result in respiratory suppression. If we look at TW, which is number 9,
I think couple things is the large jumps in the opioid dosing, then jumping from 30 to 90 morphine equivalents, as well as no documentation of the back pain was being, you know, discussed as the main concern, so there's no imaging, no anything to support that.
It looks like with that particular case, it probably was just tossed in there, because there's no logic, a Medrol dose pack, which is for non-board member, non-physicians, basic steroid pack. I don't know if that's because that patient wasn't receiving relief and that was put in there or not. Then we go ahead to case 10, which is TN. We can look at the next case would be case 11, CE.
Interesting initials.
Yeah. So CE had a couple things going on. She had Vicodin, or he did, tramadol, oxycodone.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that based on the consultant summary, the patient presented with knee pain, but we don't know which knee was painful. Standard goes again to the lack of documentation and or examination, and whether or not the patient's even talking to the doctor. I don't know that I can ascertain that it was actually a doctor-patient relationship developed here, right? Or even that they were talking. Because usually a doctor would then at least indicate which knee. I don't know that this is different than any of the other cases. I don't know that it's quite as big of an issue.
Case 12, patient IL. Looks like there was obviously the medication issue, but then
mental stability,
and I guess for good measure, the patient was given testosterone injection. No clue on that.
Well, and I think that that goes into a different realm. You know, needing a naturopathic oncologist, I would be concerned about if there was a PSA taken, if there was any urinary symptoms, if there was documentation to demonstrate the reason for the low testosterone, if there was any follow-up on that. I think that has some particular issues with it. Actually, it's another controlled substance, which is outside of the realm of opiates, but serious in itself. And that would deserve discussion.
Wouldn't there need to be definite documentation when the sort of crisis team is thrown in to assist?
Mm-hmm.
There's none.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really hard to understand what's going on in someone without the proper.
If we look at then the next case would be case number 13, which is DM.
And it's probably one of the most concerning when the chief complaint is I need meds.
Yeah, DM says I need meds, no pain complaints are documented. So we have no clue what's going on with DM, except he wants, or she wants medication.
I've already seen him talk before.
Right.
And as well, the Tylenol dosing was upwards of 4,000 milligrams with the prescriptions as well.
So with that, yeah, the high dose acetaminophen and then whatever was the medication we mixed with.
I mean, the compendium of cases don't know that there's any real medical care going on here except prescriptions.
And that's my real concern. It's all of our concerns.
I don't have proof that the doctor met with the patient.
If we look at Dr. Thompson's overall summary, he pretty much summarizes his fact and findings for us that we've just reviewed with all these various cases.
I do want to get one thing straight. There is a continued thread here that, that says that the respondent employed a nurse practitioner, the nurse practitioner was employed, but we've heard that from record that she did not actually employ, it was something her father was the employer. I just want to make, is that clear? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, nurse practitioners can prescribe on their own accord, but I think it's relevant just in case there will be one going to discuss. Sometimes employers can put pressure on employees to do certain things, but Everett was clearly not her employer.
Discuss development to 1992 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've already pretty much established this we've gone through 078, and Dr. Pia want to discuss
what did that get number 18092?
18092. Let's take a quick peek at that, quick gander. That pretty much falls within sync of the rest of these cases.
But I was thinking that the complainant was patient.
I feel like that's an interesting case because she obviously sought care for a number of years and obviously was following through with that, yet then in her complaint is very negative about the office and the experiences of the office and what she deemed to be going on there.
Should we have this case read?
Yeah, let's see.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is case number 18-092. The board received a complaint from patient JM alleging Dr. Ip is using her office to dispense opioids and other drugs recklessly to patients that have no medical history or a medical examination. JM alleges Dr. Ip uses nurse practitioners, seeing up to 50 patients a day, and has been known to forge NP scripts. JM further alleges the respondent, along with the nurse practitioner, misdiagnosed her as having liver failure, mutated blood disease disorder, osteoarthritis, and other health issues. This investigator subpoenaed the complete medical records for this patient. Respondent supplied the following: one intake form dated 11/2/2014, seven lab results between 12/23/14 and 7/19/17. Respondents' chart notes, there were nine of them between 12/9/16 and 2/9/18. According to the PMP, respondent was writing prescriptions exclusively for alprazolam from 1/14/2016 through 2/10/2018, with the exception of morphine on 11/8 and 12/9/16, and hydromorphone, an out-of-scope prescription, written on 10/6/2010. The out-of-scope hydromorphone prescription was addressed during the investigation of case number 16-061. Respondent was writing prescriptions in conjunction with other providers at the same location who were providing medications, including oxycodone. Records indicate nurse practitioner and referred the patient out for an abdominal CT on 7/10/2017 for progressive liver inflammation, among other things. Although the patient presents with a history of type 2 diabetes, according to the lab results over the years, it does not appear to be well controlled, with the exception of one reading dated 7/19/2017, which is within range. According to respondent, the patient was seen, quote, on occasion and for, quote, a second opinion. Respondent may have failed to keep adequate medical records. Respondent may have fallen below the standard of care when treating some of the patients.
I do find the complainant's summary of concerns actually kind of concerning. The only way she would know this data is if she was in these other patients' appointments and or getting information from about the clinic. You're not going to know what's happening in somebody else's visit. I do find her complaints odd, and the way she terms these things, it's as if she's being told by somebody who works at the clinic or something to that effect what is going on behind the scenes. So for what it's worth, I find that the summary of the complaint a little bit odd.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking the same thing.
Do we know if this person is a patient and also an employee?
If I may, in regards to her making any commentary about this, my concern was in relation to the allegation about seeing the 50 patients a day, giving out a lot of prescriptions, just because, again, in my opinion, it goes to some of the things that are related to the 078 and why I asked her not to make any statements about that. But I have no issue with her talking about this particular patient. I believe she knows who this is. And is familiar with why she filed a complaint, things of that nature. So I have no issue with her talking about that specifically. I just wanted to stay away from anything that would be in regards to something that may be construed that 078 kind of talked about. So that was my only issue in regards to that. So that's why I said that she wouldn't be making any commentary about that. But like I said, if she'd like to make any comments about this person, specifically JM, I'm fine with that. If you guys have questions about why this complaint might have been filed.
So the complainant has been our patient for a long time. I wasn't the first provider to see her, and I wasn't the last. In my office, I normally do a lot of administration stuff, especially within the past time period. And we realized that her insurance was not covering a specific portion of her visit, and we brought that to her attention and told her that her copay would be larger. And because we told her her copay would be larger, she told us that she was going to file a complaint against us to our boards. Otherwise, if we didn't want that complaint filed against us, then we would see her with a lesser copay.
My concern is where she got the particular information.
Regards to
just some of the repetitive things that we've seen, you know, from other complaints that she's also alleging.
So I've never forged a script. I don't know where she would say that. The nurse practitioner, by the way, Tara Wright, is in Egypt, not Africa, and we did not use her information at all after she left us. Let's see. And in regards to getting opiates easily, one second. Wait, that's not. Okay, never mind. I can't comment on that part. The next part, in regards to having a lot of patients in a day, sometimes we are open longer hours. And in regards to me diagnosing her with liver failure, I never actually talked to her about liver failure. The only
that I might have done with the liver was helping her lose weight at one point in time with go-go root soup, saying that the liver would help process the chemicals when you do lose weight.
Not that it had nothing to do with the imaging that showed some issues possibly?
At that moment, no. The reason why I did the go-go root soup was for the weight loss. I was focusing on weight loss at that point. The imaging that was done and that was referred was significantly prior to that point in time.
So you never did tell her she had a mutated blood disorder or disease?
No.
Liver failure, hepatic, or LFT issues?
Mm-hmm.
OA could be taken, she probably does. Do you know why she would have decided to put the mutated blood disorder, et cetera, into the complaint?
She is a... very vocal patient, per se, and I'm not quite sure she would have said that. I think one of my nurse practitioners might have mentioned that she was going to test for a blood disorder at one point. I don't think it was tested for, but I don't think she was ever told that she had it, and that would have been MTHFR. If that was tested for or not.
Because that's what you would have meant by the mutated blood disorder.
Yeah, if anything.
But it's microcytic anemia, more so. It's irrelevant. I do have a question on, you mentioned the insurance billing and co-pays. Who are you billing under?
For that appointment that we were seeing?
Or just bigger picture, like whether, as a naturopathic doctor, unless you're
in
network.
I don't take the insurance portion.
Okay. So
but
you're billing under the nurse practitioners?
When the nurse practitioner sees the patient, they get billed under the nurse practitioner.
And
otherwise, I just take the copay.
Would the nurse practitioner's notes look any different than yours?
It depends on which nurse practitioner. They all have their own style.
Would the insurance companies not be requesting records?
When they request records, it is sent to them.
I'm surprised that some of these chart notes would not be kicked back by insurance companies, et cetera, after conversations we've had.
We don't bill a 99215 when we bill insurance companies. We bill 99213 normally.
Okay.
So let me see if I understand this correctly. If the nurse practitioner was seeing the patient, it was billed under the nurse practitioner's MPI. If you were seeing the patient, you just took the copay, so a $35, $45, $50 copay.
Yeah.
That was the total fee for your visit.
That's correct.
Okay. And then the nurse practitioners, were they licensed at White Cranes, or did they just come in PRN?
They were full-time.
Full-time. At White Cranes.
Tara Wright practiced at three different clinics.
Okay, so she would just kind of rotate
through. She practiced 3 days a week with us, 2 days, one other place and one other place.
Okay. Is she still over there?
She's in Egypt right now.
Okay.
I think.
So are there any, since all these meds were released and were not on the market, is there anybody there right now that is taking care of those patients at White Cranes?
We have a nurse practitioner who sees them separately from me. I don't see the patients that she sees.
Okay.
I don't even talk to her about them.
Is there any additional discussion you need on these cases?
Yeah, this goes back as I'm reading through again these chart notes. There's an absolute lack of basic understanding of patient management. For instance, prazolam 2 milligrams BID, it doesn't say PO. I'm not giving an ID, but if somebody writes a prescription, you need to tell what the medicine is, how many milligrams.
not seeing it.
Okay.
All it is a summary of the conversation.
You know, going back to the mutated legislator, I can't read my screen because it's not high def. But there is a lab test here from sometime with a WBC that's high. And I already see white blood cell, red blood cell, hemoglobinopathy, hematocrit is high. And that may be
one that was like a 80 in the crit, right?
That was.
There's one that's just totally 100% wrong. Yeah.
And I didn't see it followed up on.
I don't know where
that may
fell.
Have been taken as a mutated blood disorder.
I honestly think, Dr. Rubin, it's I think that microcytic anemia may be one of the things that's kind of showing up intermittently. Is there's MCH, MCHC low. I thought that if I was seeing that was probably what was being discussed. It was like a thalassemia potentially.
Right.
But you're right, the hematocrit one in the 80s, I have no idea how you would get that.
That's all, it doesn't look like, I can't read the data, I don't know how to expand. I just literally can't even see it. Can you guys see it? Something 17 maybe?
Well, you know, that being the case.
5, 4, 17, sorry.
I mean, if you say it's a mutated blood disorder, say you go with that general verbiage, that being the case, I don't see, you know, any thoughts of hematology, oncology for secondary opinion. None of that type of stuff was done. So that's concerning. If you're beyond your level of comfort, then there's others that can take over. My suggestion would be that I'll make the motion that we go into executive, wrap up these cases
for legal advice. I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Well, let's drop back in. It's 2:15. Okay, it's 2:35, we're back into session. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and let's start off with the shortest of short, and that would be 092. So I'll need a motion on case number 092. We, a letter of concern, and then if the board wants to craft that letter of concern in terms of the verbiage, feel free to add to it.
I'll offer a letter of concern for inadequate medical records.
Okay.
That's extent of it, I don't know. I would second that.
Any other items you wanted into the letter of concern for 092?
I guess it would be offer me issue a letter of concern.
So we have a motion for that. Can I get a second?
I second that.
All those in favor, Ms. Anthony will take roll call.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, now let's go into 078. So what we, I'd like to do is make a motion to consolidate 078 and 077. Move those to a formal hearing and utilize and have the board investigation along with the medical consent report that Dr. Thompson did be submitted for that.
The information from the
investigative interview, thank you. And for the patients, and feel free to add, the patient CE, SS, KA, TN, RF, GH, and JL. Any other patients that the board members would like to have put into that formal hearing? Okay. So that's my motion for a formal hearing for those 077 and 078.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. So the motion is for motion to consolidate 077, 078, move to formal hearing based on the board investigative report and the medical consultant report.
The information
that's contained in those reports for those seven patients. Actually, there's more than seven. So we'll go through those patients again. CE, SS, KA, TN, GH, JL, and RF.
What was that, Dr. Rubin?
I said I second that motion.
So we have a second, and we're going to need a formal roll call.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, let's move on to number six. I think at this point it would be beneficial to leave in the acknowledge the certificate to dispense. And subsequently she is under a interim consent agreement that we obviously that's going to be part of number six. I don't know if there's any point in altering the interim consent agreement we currently have. I think that pretty much ties up that portion. We can look at it in November. I know there was some concern. I think for the time being, that would the interim consent agreement would suffice. Counselors, that interim consent agreement going to work for you and your client?
Judge, if you might, I'm sorry. I keep calling you Judge.
That's okay.
If you may give me one moment just to ask her.
Sure.
She's fine with that? The interim consent agreement the way it is, and then if I just may ask in regards to the 7-7 matter, the board had mentioned possibly getting a letter or written protocol for how medical records are, I guess after the request is made, how they are dispensed
members, you wanna let that, I know that was one of your concerns, you wanna let that go at this time because it is going into formal? Unless Ms. Powell.
I don't think we should continue that, so I would say not at this time.
Counsel, any other questions we can answer for you?
I don't think I have anything else, if she has any.
No questions.
Then, Ms. Thomas, Anthony will be in touch with you, so we summarized for you both 5 and 6, and.
Do you need to approve that?
Number 6, let's go ahead and put that into actually a vote then. So I'll make the motion that we, basically renew her certification.
So I'm sorry, that's a continuance.
That's a continuance, that's right.
Is that correct, or someone?
So I'll make a motion, we have a continuance for number 6, which would be application for, renewal of certificate of dispense.
I'll second that motion.
Gail, go ahead.
Dr. Rubin.
Aye.
Ms. Gallon.
Aye.
Dr. Popio.
Aye.
Dr. Sadler.
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Is there anything further, or we're excused?
There's not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on, we're almost done, so that's a good point. We'll move on to the executive director's report.
Does anybody have any questions?
Anyone have any questions on number 4?
Okay.
Does anyone, does everyone understand that? I understand that, but. That goes, that's a long, that's a historical. All right, so can we, all concur with the executive director's report?
Yes.
Okay. Future agenda items, do we have anything we'd like to address as a board?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gail, how much does it currently cost to, for somebody, like a license fee for a doctor that's in practice? I don't know if there's different levels, like if we got for 2 or 3.
I'm sorry, I'm not, I'm.
What's our licensing fee, or
annual licensing fee?
Our annual renewal?
Yeah.
Is $165.
I'd like to talk about raising that.
Actually, I would request that you, we table that, because I have some information for you regarding the matter of fees that I'd like to put on a future agenda.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll table the fees for a future agenda item. Anything else on future agenda items that we'd like to put on there? Does anyone feel they need a quick session on board training? Any of those items? Next and the last.
Thank you for your time. I'm Baron Glasgow, the executive director of the Arizona Naturopathic Medical Association. Unfortunately, this item came up a little too late to get on the agenda, but I just wanted to give you a quick update and then ask that it be added to the future agendas until it's resolved. About 5 weeks ago, we were advised that CVS Pharmacy has decided to not, at the corporate level, decided to not fill prescriptions written by NDs for any class 2 substances, which we thought was kind of odd. And so we got one complaint, followed by a second, followed by a third, and today we've received 4 complaints from different NDs. So through our lobbyists, who are also attorneys, we reached out to CVS and ultimately got to their chief legal counsel, who cited the legislation that was passed this year
was particularly odd was that the section that they cited had to do with dispensing, not prescribing. And what they cited, and I can provide any of this information to you, Gail's seen it, is they take the definition of dispense, and the definition of dispense in statute includes all of the steps that are needed to dispense, which includes prescribing, it includes labeling, it includes packaging. But they interpret the fact that it includes dispensing in that description to mean that naturopathic physicians can no longer dispense Class II substances, which is really bizarre to us. So we shared with them our opinion that it was incorrect. Last Thursday, we met with Christina Corriere with the governor's office to have her weigh in on this, and we provided them with the information that Christina provided to us. We advised them if they needed to, they can contact the governor's office, because that's certainly not the way the governor's office interprets it. We came to believe about a week, 10 days ago, that CVS had engaged outside counsel to look at this matter. And so this thing has really taken on a life of its own. The thing that's particularly troubling to me, beyond the fact that the patients of RNDs who send their patients to CVS, they can't get their scripts filled, is that they're only enforcing this against NDs, even though that particular section has to do with everybody that prescribes Schedule II, including MDs and DOs. So we're hoping that this thing is resolved quickly. We've gone as far up the legal counsel chain as in CVS as we can. But it's just kind of a bizarre interpretation. As far as we know, because we haven't received any other complaints, CVS is the only pharmacy that's enforcing it or interpreting this way. So it's kind of a weird one, but I wanted to make sure that you guys knew what's been happening there. And again, we were too late to get on this month's agenda, but we respectfully request that we simply have a few minutes on the next month's agenda so we can discuss it if we need to.
I think that we should definitely address that on the next agenda. Does any board member have objection putting that on the agenda? Okay.
Thank you. Only other thing I wanted to add is that we continue to educate those doctors that want to take advantage of it on the issues that the board has said are of importance to you. Last month we held what I thought was a great webinar with Dr. Corbin Cronin on charting. And for those that participated in it, I'd like to believe that we'll never see one of them. But we have that available as a webinar on our website for those that do want to learn, because we recognize that charting continues to be an issue and we would like those problems to go away. So that's it. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And then you'll submit to us for November.
Yes.
Exactly what you want.
I sure will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We have a motion to adjourn. Anyone have any other questions? Thanks for hanging in. And it is 2:50, and we are adjourned.